For some time now, I've been aware of a growing movement here of people who seek to learn the ideals of the Vulcan philosophy. They've been declared enemies of the state. But there are a few in the Romulan hierarchy, like Pardek, who are sympathetic. He asked me to come now because he believes it may be time to take the first step toward reunification.
Reunification? After so many centuries? After so many fundamental differences have evolved between your peoples?
It would seem unlikely to succeed, but I cannot ignore the potential rewards that a union between our two worlds would bring.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge...
This is Tyler Orton, making it so.
Oh, wow. And now for this week's conundrum, the future of the Alpha Quadrant.
Are we talking about the 29th century, Cam?
I don't know.
No, I think what we want to do is tackle the Picard spinoff era.
Right.
Of the Alpha Quadrant.
And beyond.
Well, exactly, because we got to the end of Deep Space Nine, and we started like examining how different Ferenginar is going to be. And mm-hmm. then I was doing the last chapter in prep for the What You Leave Behind finale discussion that we're going to have. And Ezri had pointed out how much the Klingon Empire needs to change if it wants to persist. And then you get to What You Leave Behind, and Cardassia is just completely obliterated.
Right,
and
yeah.
They're making the point there that Cardassia is going to have to move on. You get to Star Trek 2009, and Romulus is literally destroyed.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, look at all the changes going on throughout the entire Alpha Quadrant. And I think you and I realize, like, Picard's going to be dealing with a very different sort of galaxy than the one that was so familiar to us in the 1990s. And it's going to be interesting to kind of tackle what this means for the series going forward. But first of all, we have news coming out of New York Comic Con the other week with regards to what they want to do with the Picard spinoff that I think might make some fans happy, but it caused a little bit of pause for the two of us, though, Cam.
Yeah. They announced that it would be an ongoing series as opposed to maybe a one-season Fargo-like or True Detective-like story.
Well, yeah, like a limited series.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll correct you there because, like...
I guess they had multiple seasons,
yeah,
so
they
it's
have
confusing.
Multiple seasons, yeah.
Well, Captain Worf is season two.
Is that it?
But yeah.
Is every TNG main cast member going to get their own spin-off season going forward?
Nurse Ogawa.
I can't wait to watch 13 episodes of Barkley.
Yeah.
And you and I were really high on the idea of Captain Picard having kind of like, I don't know, like a 10 to 13 episode kind of like final chapter for his journey.
Yeah.
They've been telling us kind of the right things. Now, Patrick Stewart came out on Las Vegas stage and said, this is not the Picard that you know. He might not even be a captain anymore. And I was intrigued by what that could mean for the character. But if it's an ongoing series and he's not a captain, like, what is he doing exactly?
Well, it means our Captain Picard as Boothby pitch is going to be really boring.
Yeah, the original pitch was so exciting, by the way. So, I mean, you and I were going back and forth, and like, we're kind of joking about maybe him being, you know, groundskeeper Boothby.
I don't even know
again.
If I was joking. I was like, that actually makes a lot of sense in my mind.
Well, the thing that I said, like, is he just going to be in charge of Starfleet Academy?
Right.
But they did want to have their own Starfleet Academy spinoff.
Sure.
You know, but the idea of, like, Picard being, like, the commandant of Starfleet Academy, it doesn't excite me.
Right.
You know, I think, but the idea of him being, I guess, maybe like a diplomat over like 10 to 13 episodes where he, you know, kind of joins this one crew as a civilian and he's trying to advise through this big, you know, tumultuous sort of, I don't know, trade deal or so, I don't know, something like that. Like I could wrap my head around this, but an ongoing series of Picard doing what exactly? Like I'm even more confused than I was before. And I like the idea of having some sort of finality to this character, but if they want to turn it into an ongoing series, I'm really rubbing my chin and
yeah.
thinking, how do they pull this off in which it doesn't seem as if they're just kind of stretching the character out, you know, beyond what he really justifies. Picard's one of the greatest characters of, you know, TV, period.
Right. And this is only the second Star Trek series to come out of this whole Kurtzman factory.
Yeah.
Do they feel brave enough to really mix up the Star Trek format yet? Because Deep Space Nine, it took three series before they got to a space station show. Like, this Captain Picard that we'd pitched, like, whether it was the Boothby type story or some sort of, you know.
We should tell listeners we're not earnest about Picard being a groundskeeper.
I'm semi-earnest.
Okay.
You know, but, you know, the sort of maybe contemplative Picard story. Yeah. Are they ready for that, or are they still thinking, like, they're still going to play it a little bit safe and, like, give fans a little bit of what they want? They might try and mix it up a bit, because I think Discovery's done things that mixes up the format a bit, but it's still sticking to your ship-based crew show.
I know. I think the way that they want to tackle it is having it a ship-bound series.
Yeah.
I just don't know how you really tackle the great themes of Picard's life if it is a planet-bound, academy-bound series. And look, I'm just using Academy as kind of a jumping off point, just because it seems like the most obvious thing.
Yeah,
This is a kind of a tough one. Like,
it is.
You know, like I seem to have a lot of faith that the only reason Patrick Stewart's jumping aboard is that they have a very interesting hook into this. But I thought the interesting hook was, like, this is Picard's final chapter, more.
Yeah.
But if it's an ongoing series, and I'll just come out and say it, like, Patrick Stewart's getting up there in the years.
Yeah.
Does he have seven more seasons worth of TV in him?
Right.
Probably not.
Yeah.
You know? So
I'm going to be really interested to see how many episodes a season it is. It would not surprise me if it was like eight.
Yeah. I buy that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also just wonder, I want to see what Patrick Stewart's paycheck is for this. Like, I would, you know, he's raking in the dough.
And I would laugh so hard if they announced it's like 24 episodes a season. I'd be like, wow, didn't see that one coming either.
And he's
either.
Making, like, Kelsey Grammer money from, like, the 1990s Frasier era, where it's like, holy shit.
Having tossed salad and scrambled eggs till the cows come home.
Yes. So, look, this brings us, I guess, to what our overall episode topic is what exactly is Picard going to be doing in this universe moving
forward? What world is he even living in?
So I'm just for my own brain to make sense of things, I have to picture him being on a ship-bound series, you know, and he's going to be dealing with a lot of the familiar aliens that, you know, we've seen before, or is he?
Right.
I don't know. But the thing is,
even if it isn't a ship-bound series, he's still going to be encountering aliens that I think represent what Star Trek is known for, especially TNG. So even if it isn't like a ship, you know, planet-hopping show, you're still going to see a lot of the same themes of the Alpha Quadrant, I think, paid off in this Captain Picard spinoff.
Yeah. And for me, part of the inspiration is, you know, let's start off with maybe the Klingons, like what their society is like right now. Because as we left them at the end of Deep Space Nine, that was really the last time that we got a good look at them.
We were told it would take them like 10 years to recover.
Yeah, from the Dominion War. Yeah. And Martok's in charge. And this is not a politician by nature. He is a soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought, you know, Worf by his side.
Always a smart move.
Yeah, sure. Okay. But the thing is, like, we also know that by Nemesis, and we had this discussion during our What You Leave Behind episode review, by the time we get to Nemesis, well, Worf is no longer on Kronos.
Right.
He is back in a Starfleet uniform. I don't know. But here's a very important kind of, and bear with me, listeners. I'm going to go to an Esri Dax passage that she shares in Tacking Into the Wind. And I think this is really what stuck in my brain more than anything else, more than the fate of Gowron, more than Worf's own journey as a short-lived diplomat. But here's what Esri says. I tend to look at the Empire with a little bit more skepticism than Curzon or Jadzia did. I see a society that is deep in denial about itself. We're talking about a warrior culture that prides itself on maintaining centuries-old traditions of honor and integrity, but in reality, it's willing to accept corruption at the highest levels. Who is the last leader of the High Council that you respected? Has there ever been one? And how many times have you had to cover up the crimes of Klingon leaders because you were told it was good for the Empire? I know this sounds harsh, but the truth is you have to be willing to accept a government that you know is corrupt. Gowron's just the latest example. Worf, you are the most honorable and decent man I've ever met. And if you're willing to tolerate men like Gowron, then what hope is there for the Empire?
Right.
This has stuck in my brain so much about what the future really holds for the Klingon Empire, because you have very much like a reform figure like Martok, if there's anyone that I think can kind of cling, clean up the Klingon Empire, but
right.
cling up the Klingon Empire, I think yeah. Martok would be the right choice.
Right.
So going forward, are we going to have a reformed Klingon Empire, Cam, or do you think the writers are like, yeah, it's the same old Klingons that we always know?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the same people behind Picard are people who are involved with Discovery, the first season. We saw they took a very drastic look at what the Klingons were on that show.
Yeah.
And so I just wonder how close the comparison is to these Captain Picard Klingons to, say, the TNG Klingons. Mm. Like, I wonder if it feels like a very major transition between the two series, kind of like the original series Klingons to Next Generation.
So when you say this two series, I just want to make sure we're on the same page. Are you talking yeah. about Discovery to the Picard spinoff or TNG to the
Picard? Like the 24th century TNG era okay. or DS9 era into like the Picard era.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm really wondering. I would like to think it's going to feel like a very natural progression that feels like it comes from the same sort of franchise worldview and sensibilities of the Berman era, but I don't think that's likely at all.
No, I don't think so either.
It's kind of like when I saw the 2009 J.J. Abrams movie, and they would show scenes in the future of, you know, where Spock is on Vulcan and all that sort of thing, dealing with the Romulans. I remember watching those scenes and being like, this does not in any way feel to me like the shows that I watch set just before like those periods of time.
In the 24th century yes. that we're so familiar with from the Berman era.
Yes. Yeah. It felt completely alien to me what I was seeing.
Well, I mean, you were on a different planet.
That's also true. Yeah. But I'm wondering if that's how Picard is going to feel in its representations of these species. And I think yeah. they've got to be super careful about this because Picard is a constant throughout.
Mm-hmm.
And Picard is so specifically tied to that 24th century era that to drastically change it too much would feel weird.
Okay, we'll keep going with the Klingons, yeah, yeah. but I'm curious about maybe just the aesthetics well, yeah. of the Picard spinoff, and that I don't think they're going to make it look like the Berman era.
Right.
I think the aesthetics we can expect are far more closer to what we're seeing in Star Trek Discovery, but with their own distinct sort of flair.
Sure.
And I think with that, it's going to have different costuming for mm-hmm. the Klingons, even in the 21st century, because let's be honest, those uniforms, they've had them at the Paramount lot for, what, like 35 years yeah, at this yeah. point? They're going to have a different look. Maybe the ridges are a little bit different, but based on the Discovery Season 2 trailer, it looks as if they're going to more of the classic look. But I'm kind of interested in maybe kind of beyond the aesthetics is kind of the cultural aspect of where the Klingons are right more. In my brain, it makes sense that after a devastating Dominion War, this is an empire that is both in retreat to mm-hmm. a certain degree and in reform as well, where they realize that, okay, they can honor their culture as a warrior species, but if they want to survive, they have to kind of get a little bit more progressive. So where does that leave them as an entity to deal with in the 24th century? I don't think they're going to be aggressors.
Right.
But what part would they really play that's going to be of any interest if there are a reformed kind of culture as well as one that may be not as expansionist going sure. forward, you know?
And also, I mean, how much can you change Klingon society before they stop feeling like the Klingons you know?
I know. Yeah.
And that's a real problem. Like, you can see why they didn't, you know, change them up too much over the course of, you know, TNG, DS9, and Voyager. Like, they kept them very consistent. I mean, those were obviously all 24th century, but there was definitely an effort there to make them feel consistent across all three. And so I really do wonder, now that fans, I think, look at that era as what Klingons are. I mean, I don't think a lot of fans liked, say, the Star Trek Into Darkness Klingons.
No, I remember we walked out of that movie with one of our friends and a former guest on the podcast, Adrian McNair, who was on the Star Trek First Contact review episode, if you guys want to go look it up. Bonus episode number 8 for all right. those archivists out there. Adrian, I remember, was not impressed at all with Klingons. And I would consider him to be kind of one of those, like, just kind of everyday fans, you know, like very much into Star Trek, but probably not as hardcore as you and I.
Sure. And there's very specific elements people like about the Klingons. And I just wonder if you run them through a lot of social change, is it appealing dramatically to see it on the show? I mean, I hope so. I'd like to think that it has really strong writers who can make this evolution feel interesting and draw me into the storytelling. But I can't help but think of all the people we see dressed as Klingons at the cons, very much kind of representing that 24th century ideal of what Klingons are. And if you take elements like that away, are they still appealing?
So this social change then, what is it? Amount to? Is it really just getting away from corruption? Because that's what that's what Ezri was saying. You have a very corrupt government. I can buy it if they want to move away from corruption, you know, and they can still retain their warrior culture, but like, I just don't see them conquering planet after planet again.
Exactly. Like, there is that sort of little bit of like a, almost like a space pirate kind of feel to the Klingons. I think they've got to be very careful not to lose that sort of essence of who they are.
Now, the thing I would find very interesting, but I would feel as if it's a bit of a betrayal of Martok's character, in that it would imply that Martok failed as Chancellor. But if the Klingon Empire had kind of fallen into like maybe a series of petty kingdoms, you know, where you have various high houses, they're controlling their own particular region of the empire, and it becomes more of a fragmented sort of empire with different sorts of efforts to, I guess, influence surrounding space, you know, where I think it would be great creatively, but I think fundamentally it would mean that Martok sucks at his job. And I think that would be disappointing for us to find out.
I do hope, though, speaking of Martok, they're looking very closely at that character, because that's a progressive Klingon character who still embodies everything we love about Klingons.
Yeah, yeah. Like, we like Worf. But doesn't
sometimes? depends on the depiction.
But doesn't Martok seem like the true embodiment of a Klingon, where he is honorable? He likes to drink his blood wine. He is a true warrior. Whereas Worf, he's got a bit of a stick up his butt most of the time,
right?
You know?
Yeah, and Worf also has the disadvantage of, you know, he was raised on Earth. He doesn't.
I know. I had that disadvantage too. I can't tell you how much it's held me back in life.
He's not the true Klingon that we see with like a Martok, who very much represents the whole of their society. Worf obviously brings kind of both to the equation with both Earth and Klingon.
Well, let me ask you this. We'll just do hypotheticals here.
Yeah.
Let's say we see Martok in this spinoff.
I hope to God we do.
I hope to God we do.
That would be so amazing.
I think it might be for like one scene tops if we do get it. But where do you want to see him at this point? Like beyond like a gray mane? I mean, is he a leader in trouble? Is he one who is uncertain about what to do next? Or is he somebody who's completely sure of himself because of the success that he had during the Dominion War and maybe 20 years of, you know, introducing reforms to his empire? Like, where do you think we find Martok in this era?
I would like to see him as a Klingon leader who is in his elder days, but also very dignified and has accomplished a lot of good in his time. Like, we don't tend to see that with Klingon leaders. Usually they're pretty corrupt and sketchy by the end.
Is it really just Gorkon, who seems to be like the only real honorable Klingon leader we've ever met?
Yeah, and look what happened to him.
Yeah, exactly.
So I would like to see a Martok who is at the end of his career and able to basically vocalize what he has done for Klingon culture.
Did you just say vocalize? That is such a bad pun, Cam.
Not intentional. You know, able to basically say what he has accomplished for it and be comfortable with that and still occupy a role where he's compelling and we have a certain amount of awe for this character, because we haven't had that with any of the Klingon leaders. We wanted to see them all kind of on the receiving end of a batleth, with the exception of Gorkon.
Yeah,
you know, and Laurel, she seems pretty cool, but a lot of the other ones they would show on, like, you know, TNG or whatever, they were like, come on, like Gowron.
My biggest fear though is like, when we see him, he's gonna remind us very much of Denethor in the Two Towers, where Wormtongue is influencing him and he's just like shuffling around. Yeah. It's like, I don't want to see Martok in that shape. Like, I want him to be kind of the Klingon that we remembered, but maybe there are some struggles that he's having as he's trying to keep this empire together as it's undergoing these huge reforms.
How much have the Klingons really recovered by the time we get to this Picard series? Like, do they regain the power they even once had? Because, you know, it takes 10 years, apparently, for them to kind of put themselves back together after the Dominion War. A lot can happen in 10 years in terms of power struggles in a quadrant.
I just think it makes so much sense thematically that the Dominion War was the last great war that the Klingon Empire, that as we know it, mm-hmm. is able to fight.
Right.
Just for pure logistical reasons, it's just not within their empire anymore, you know?
Well, it also feels like when you look at where the 24th century was going, how much room is there for what the Klingons bring to the table?
Exactly. Yeah. Because here's the thing. We're introduced to them in the original series and the movies as kind of the antagonists.
Yeah.
And I think it was genius when they did The Next Generation and they turned them into allies.
Right.
Where do you go with them next? Now,
yeah,
like, so we went and saw them back in Discovery era, and they're flipped back to antagonists.
Sure.
So we've already done that again.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, it's kind of tough right now to find something truly original and interesting to do with them, unless, you know, they kind of shake things up with Martok or.
And you don't want to see a case of like what they did with DS9 season 4, where they suddenly like find a way to make them adversaries. Again, for a brief period of time, like, that's just kind of lame.
Well, we got, like, Way of the Warrior.
Yeah, like
that's one of our favorite episodes.
That season is still very enjoyable in Deep Space Nine.
But it would just feel like we're just kind of going back to the same territory again and again.
Yeah.
And the other person we should bring up, though, is what is Worf doing at this point? He's
captaining a ship, Tyler, haven't you heard?
I know, that's what Michael Dorn says. But we're pretty much guaranteed, like, at least a Michael Dorn cameo in this.
Yeah.
And it disappoints me that, you know, Nemesis establishes that he's not part of the diplomatic corps anymore, and Michael Dorn has been very hardcore about he wants a Captain Worf spinoff.
Hardcore, huh?
So many bad Klingon name puns that we've been dropping on each other this episode. So, I picture Worf is not really part of this new empire anymore, and that really bums me out based on where we left off with him in the series finale of DS9. So what role does he really play as a, I guess he's a Starfleet officer at this point?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, to me, the Worf question looms larger than the Martok question, in that I really don't know what Worf's story is anymore with regards to what's going on in the Klingon Empire.
Right, yeah. And I mean, how much longer really until we see more and more Klingons in Starfleet?
Yeah.
It just feels like the bond between the Klingons and Starfleet was getting better and better and better. I mean, how long until there's a certain amount of influencing going on between each side where they do start to overcome the differences of the past and become tight allies?
At the very least, we'll have Lieutenant Torres Paris serving under Picard.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So,
I mean, do you think in the future that Klingons are still a hugely prominent part of the stories they'd be telling in the Alpha Quadrant?
No.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason I think they would be is because Klingons are incredibly popular and marketable.
Yeah.
But I think if you're looking at it from the point of view organic storytelling, I don't know. I feel like you'd be bending over backwards a lot to do it.
I 100% agree. And I think the writers of the series, they're probably, like, I'm sure we'll get an appearance from the Klingons, but I don't think they're going to be, like, the spine of, you know, season 1. And I don't think the writers are necessarily interested in doing a lot of Klingon stuff. We got that in Star Trek Discovery, which has a lot of the same creative, you know, forces behind it. I think they're ready to kind of, you know, touch on the Klingons, but it's not going to be a big centerpiece.
Right.
So why don't we talk a little bit about the Romulans?
Yeah.
Because, okay.
Look. Everything's good with them. Moving on.
Moving on, yeah. No, but last time we saw them, which was in Star Trek 2009, and, okay, you know, let's go a little bit further back. In Star Trek Nemesis.
Yeah. The council was destroyed.
The Senate was assassinated by Shinzon and crew.
Yeah.
And then 10 years later, or not even, their entire planet, whatever recovery the Senate was able to make, the entire planet is just destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
So I picture this very much as, you know, I don't think the bulk of their fleet was somehow, you know, landed on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, the fleet was still around, but the planet's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this actually sets us up for something very, very interesting, in which maybe we actually get some closure to Spock's efforts to reunify.
I was thinking the same thing.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. This makes a lot of sense to me, in that the threads of unification were kind of dropped after that two-parter. We never got the payoff that seemed like that two-parter was promising.
Nope.
But with Romulus destroyed and the Romulans, you know, kind of struggling, it would be pretty cool and I think very Star Trek-y if the Vulcans were the ones that came to their aid and helped them.
Yes.
And maybe helped forge the bond that would lead to unification or reunification.
So, but billions of Romulans are dead.
Yes.
So I think what you end up with is like maximum maybe 100 million Romulans still left in the galaxy.
Yeah.
You know,
because plus the Remans. Don't forget the Remans.
Plus the Remans. Well, no, that's just that's a very good point, in that the Remans would still have their own planets.
Right.
You know, and so would that mean maybe the Remans take a far more prominent role in this empire? Like, is Shinzon ultimately successful, not in his effort to destroy Earth, which he wanted so much, but in his effort to grant ascendancy towards the Remans? Is he ultimately successful because of, you know, what happens to Romulus?
I would not expect whatever series tackles these sorts of stories to be looking to Star Trek Nemesis for threads, but I don't know that the Remans will play a prominent role. I feel like they'll always be kind of backgrounded.
And I might actually be totally misremembering, but was Romulus destroyed because of a supernova?
Yeah.
So that means Remus is destroyed as well, right?
Probably.
Okay, so I don't think, I don't think the Remans are playing.
I'm sure I feel like the Star Trek Captain Picard people are like, yep, Remus was destroyed.
Sure, okay. So, I think what it leads to is we have a big chunk of Romulans still around.
Mm-hmm.
And in this Prime universe, Vulcan is not destroyed. Vulcan is still there.
Yeah.
So I think it's actually quite interesting if you have like this big, you know, Romulan diaspora on Vulcan.
Right.
Like I'm not so interested in the Vulcans going to Romulan space. I'm far more interested in the Romulans who are on Vulcan right now, and how that actually plays an influence in, say, Federation politics and whatever Picard gets up to. Like, yeah. I think there's actually so much potential to pay off what was built up to like 28 years ago, you know? I'm generally more excited about what maybe the Romulans can do versus what the Klingons can do in the 24th century.
That would actually be a really interesting idea for the series, in that you have Picard the diplomat coming in to kind of aid in the reunification efforts on behalf of Spock, who he had a relationship with in the past. Like, mm-hmm. I actually think you could present that in a way where it would be able to be grasped by people who didn't necessarily watch Unification or The Next Generation.
Yeah.
It would be more of a framework for your series. I actually think that would be a really good idea, and it's allowing the writers a way to kind of reintroduce both Romulans and Vulcans to new viewers, as well as catch people up to date as to where they're at.
Did you say catch people up to data?
I did not.
Oh, okay.
He's not a Klingon. You're not allowed to use that one. You have to come up with Romulan names right now.
Oh, yeah. All my Romulan names.
You got to find when I say a word similar to Shinzon, I guess. But no, like, I genuinely think that could be an interesting framework for a series.
Yeah.
And give, if this was a one season show, it would work so well as like kind of a grand framework for what this whole great drama of Picard's maybe final feat of diplomacy is. Like, I think that would be actually really cool.
No, I agree. And I think I know what the episode title is of the Romulan-centered story.
Okay.
It's called Embedded. They're embedded.
Ken. Right, yeah.
Yeah.
No, he's embedded. Picard is embedded.
Okay, yeah. So, look, I think with regards to the Romulans, like, throughout TNG, they were kind of the primary antagonists.
Yeah.
You know, I know we can point to, you know, the Borg or whatever, but, like, the Romulans appeared in so many episodes, and I think at a certain point Michael Piller was like, okay, we have to stop doing Romulans as the antagonist. So I think it is actually interesting if we are in an entirely different place with the Romulans at this point. But it also makes me question, what does the Empire actually look like now?
Yeah.
In that we actually never, very much like the Klingons, we never got to see any, I don't know if I want to use the word subjugated, but we didn't really see the subjugated species of the Klingon Empire. We didn't really see the subjugated species of the Romulans other than the Remans.
Right.
So I wonder if that actually gives rise to a lot of independence movements within some of these planets, knowing that they're I don't know. I hate using the word overlord or whatever, but yeah, you know, that it's destroyed. So I wonder if that means, I don't know, like, are some of these planets applying for Federation membership? Yeah. We have this unification effort going on as well simultaneously.
Yeah, how much power do the Romulans have once Romulus is wiped out on these other planets? Is it like the Ewoks at the end of Return of the Jedi, like looking at the fireworks in the sky and cheering?
Pretty much, yeah.
And singing Yub Nub.
But, you know, I'll go back to what I said earlier, though, is that, you know, it's not as if, like, when the planet was destroyed, the ships were destroyed with it. So, definitely, like, the bulk of the forces are still out there, which is actually very fascinating to me. Like, what happens if your home base is completely obliterated, you know? Let's say...
Wouldn't it just be chaotic, though?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I just don't think they'd be able to...
complicated to, like, execute on screen and very confusing for viewers.
Yeah.
So...
that's why I just wonder if you see Romulans entering more of, like... kind of peaceful terms. Isn't that kind of the way things tend to go with adversaries? Eventually, they either get wiped out completely or they do kind of settle their differences with the heroes.
So is that it? It's kind of like, okay, they were allies during the Dominion War. Mm-hmm. And we actually had Inter Arma Enim Silent Legis, which was establishing how there was kind of this movement for some Romulans to more closely align with the Federation.
Yeah.
We have that established. We have the destruction of Romulus and the destruction of the Senate established as well. And it kind of flips things on its head, very much like how Klingons were allies when Next Gen started. Like, I think this is actually kind of the way that they go now, is that, you know, let's forget about them as antagonists. They're now allies.
Well, isn't that ultimately what Star Trek is all about?
Yeah,
is
yeah.
making peace with those different than you and, you know, working together for something better?
Yeah.
Like, the Romulans are really stubborn for a lot of years. And were very difficult to deal with. But when you have Romulus getting wiped out and they're in definitely not a powerful position, if you have the Federation lending that helping hand, that can make a big difference.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the Romulans, again, are very stubborn. I don't know how well or how happily they take that helping hand or if they're even willing to deal with the Federation or Starfleet. But I think it would be interesting to see them build something new, whatever that is.
Yeah, it's a big red bubble that J.J. Abrams seems to love so much.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Why don't we talk about the Cardassians now? Because I think this is fascinating. There are 800 million people at last count were killed during the Dominion... well, at the very end of the Dominion War. This is a planet where probably like a good like 20% of the population is dead.
Yeah.
I think the Cardassian Union is gone. Like, you have Cardassia... but the planets that they had, you know, subjugated and conquered, they're either independent or they have either. And I know I'm backtracking on maybe what we had speculated with regards to the Klingons and the Romulans, but I really kind of envision post-Dominion War Cardassia as being kind of very much divided like Germany was post-World War II.
I mean, there's a lot of parallels between Nazi Germany and the Cardassians.
Yeah, so let's say hypothetically, you know, maybe a third of the planets were under the influence of the Federation, a third under the Klingons, a third under the Romulans. And if they're declaring independence, then maybe, you know, the Federation absorbs a big chunk of them. Maybe the Romulans do. Maybe the Klingons do. And I think that's actually interesting. So where does that leave Cardassia Prime itself? I know I've pitched this on the show before, but I really like the idea of just this one-off kind of, not adventure, but like storyline where Cardassia is very much kind of treated like East Berlin in, you know, during the Cold War. What better species to do a spy story than with the Cardassians?
Sure.
And I'm not saying that we need to have, you know, Garrick, you know, front and center.
You just want Dixon Hill back.
Obviously, yeah. You know, but like, I think there's a lot of potential to explore the Cardassians. And Kim, you brought this up when we were talking about the finale, where like, they were all about art and science at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it was Goldman Dredd who said, you know, but then I think like a famine or something hit and then the military had to really take over.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how over the last couple centuries, it became such a kind of fascist sort of society.
Right.
It's interesting to kind of look back at these people that we associate as being very Nazi-esque and seeing what happens when, you know, they revert back to like their nature of art and science and all that. Like, I'm intrigued by what the next step is for the Cardassians. I don't think they're going to be big players in the 24th century.
And what is the next generation like? in Cardassia.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they look back at the previous generation and are like, we do not want to go down that road again.
I picture like a lot of like Bajoran Cardassian outreach.
Sure.
You know, like that's interesting to me.
Yeah.
You know,
I would love to see a future where it's not about Cardassia or Cardassians as these potential adversaries or whatever. I just like the idea of having Cardassian characters out and about, you know, no longer kind of sticking all together in this one union of power. But like, we just have Cardassian people who, because of everything collapsing and being reborn, are just more out there in the universe.
Yeah, and you and I, we've discussed this before. We'd love to see a Cardassian on the bridge of the Federation starship. And I think this Picard spinoff would lend itself to that very much so.
Right.
How well they, well, whether they even do that or how well they execute it, that's yet to be seen. But yeah, I'd very much love to see the Cardassians. Look, their society has undertaken supreme change, but I think that the characteristics that we associate with them, let's say like a lot of hubris,
right,
for example, it would very much remain within the characters that we're interacting with. And I think that can be a lot of fun. The Cardassians are a fun species to deal with.
And we've seen in the past, Star Trek loves bringing adversary aliens onto the, you know, the crew, because we had, of course, Worf comes in for Next Generation.
Yep.
You had initially plans to make Savick Romulan. That kind of fell by the wayside. Yeah. But the idea of them, at least at some point, wanting to have a Romulan with the crew. And then you, of course, have Seven of Nine, a Borg serving. The show in the franchise likes bringing adversaries in because, A, it produces really great drama, and it is also a really fun way of showing just the evolution of an alien species in shorthand.
I can't wait to see the 8472 crew member.
Oh, I would love that.
At the helm of Picard's ship.
He has to wear a funny little hat, though.
Yeah, no. I mean, we're on the same page. Yeah. I'm not going to disagree there. So when we think about all the Cardassian characters we have left to mine, everyone's dead.
Yeah.
Except for Garak.
Yeah.
Garak is one of my favorite characters in Star Trek of all time. I don't need to see him in this spin-off.
Do you really want to see him having diplomatic talks with Picard?
No, I don't.
Yeah, I don't either.
Like, I just feel like whatever Garak is up to in the 24th century, my imagination is a much better vessel for it than what we actually see realized on screen.
Yeah.
In that whatever happens, I think I'll be disappointed by, is he this next spy master? I don't want to see that. I don't think that's where the Cardassians are going. You brought it up the other week. Like, Garak doesn't really have a place in this new Cardassia.
Right. It's kind of like the No Country for Old Men scenario with Garak, yeah.
Yeah. So, and I don't think the writer, if they were to feature him, I don't know if they would be able to acknowledge the fact that this is a man without a country at this point.
Right.
And, like, does Garak become a poet? That's not very interesting to watch.
Right.
So I just don't think he has a real place in the spinoff, despite the fact he's one of the best characters ever that's been featured in Star Trek.
I would love it if Cardassia has, like, a new young hip ruler.
Yeah.
Who's kind of like the Justin Trudeau for Canada, you know,
sure.
Who's just like, he's wearing jeans.
He's like, you want some avocado toast?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, man, you want to go to this great craft brewery?
I would just think that would be really interesting to see from the Cardassians, of like a ruler of Cardassians like, no, we're not like that anymore.
Does he dress like Adam from Way to Eden?
Well, obviously.
Okay. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Do we want to mosey on over to the Ferengi now?
Yeah, I think the Ferengi could be really important.
We touched on this as well.
Yeah.
And I am so fascinated by whatever happens to the Ferengi next, because I think it would be such a betrayal to Rom's character if, as Gray Negus, he's an utter failure and reforms aren't enacted. If only because I think the role of women in Ferengi society would ensure that these reforms are successful. If there's a suffrage movement that is successful, do you think Ferengi women, would they really cling on, sorry, no pun intended, cling on to the ways of the past?
Yeah.
No. Like, I think reform is inevitable for the Ferengi, but it also offers us a lot of room for a lot of conflict, because you're going to have holdouts like Quark.
Yeah.
And you're also going to have people that surprisingly embrace it, much like Brunt did.
Sure.
So I think this is very interesting to see. Like, I want to see, like, Ferengi women in this new series, in that, like, we only ever saw, what, Pell and Ishka?
Right.
Those are literally the only Ferengi women we ever saw in Star Trek. It was so bizarre. I think we really need to see, like, much more of a women presence of the Ferengi alliance moving forward.
I hope the show, if it's Picard or whatever other 24th century, 25th century show they do that tackles the Ferengi, I hope they treat them with the amount of dignity and depth that Deep Space Nine did. Because I think a lot of the time the tendency is to throw the, you know, the Ferengi in there like that Enterprise episode or, you know, the Voyager episode, False Prophets. It's like, oh yeah, they're wacky cut-ups who love money. Like, Deep Space Nine was the only one that seemed genuinely interested in developing them.
As opposed to just making them, like, cheap comic relief?
Sure. Or just kind of, like, an alien species you can throw in that is very easy to convey in shorthand.
But the thing is, it was only when they started treating the Ferengi seriously that they became a genuinely compelling species.
I agree.
And if they...
I wonder if Patrick Stewart's like, no Ferengi on the show, please.
He might.
Like, I don't know how popular the Ferengi are with show creators. I genuinely don't.
Well, with Iris Stephen Bear.
Well, they're very popular with him.
Yeah.
But I have often wondered how much other creators love the Ferengi.
But maybe they just don't know if they can get a real handle on them, making them more than just characters. And the thing is, I just don't want to see Ferengi characters. Like, I think that Quark, Rom, Nog, they all prove that there's so much depth and so many layers to them that you don't need to do this.
It would be very difficult, I think, for other series, other than Deep Space Nine, to write scenes of Rom as the ruler of Ferenginar having, say, a conversation with a Picard or, you know, what a Burnham or what have you. You know what I mean? Like, those types of characters. Yeah. Because it's such a broad performance that Max Gronchick gives that, boy, tone is tough to match with those Ferengi stories.
I'm so fearful that if we have a Grand Nagus Rom scene, like, it's going to be played 100% for laughs. And it's just good. Like, the stinger at the end of the scene is going to be him going, Mookie.
Or it's just played so serious that you're like, this doesn't feel like Rom.
Yeah.
And that's why I wonder
I'm fearful of the Ferengi's portrayal going forward.
I don't know if I'm fearful of it, but I do think that they may shy away from using the Ferengi very much. I think you may see some Ferengi characters, but I feel like there's not going to be a lot of analysis or exploration of the evolution of Ferenginar.
I think the best case scenario is that we see a Ferengi character pop up.
On the bridge.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. But let's say he is totally in the mold of Quark.
Right.
I can buy that in that this is a society in conflict. And if he's totally in the mold of Rom, like a reformist, I can buy that as well. This is a society undergoing reform. But the thing is, if you introduce like a whole crew of Ferengi and they're all in kind of next gen mode Ferengi.
Sure, with
like
laser whips and
whatever. Yeah, just like, oh man, they're really doing a disservice to what they had set up by the end of Deep Space Nine with regards to the future of the Ferengi.
Yeah. No, I agree.
But best we can hope for is maybe a Captain Nog cameo.
Sure.
I'm down for that.
I don't think it'll ever happen, but I would love it.
I don't think it'll ever happen, but I'm totally down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I will say, Nog being in Starfleet, being the first Ferengi in Starfleet, does open the door for now just having Ferengis on the show in crew positions.
I'm down with that.
And you don't even need to like acknowledge it as any sort of big deal.
I mean, if we have an 8472 and a bowler cap, you know, like right next on the ops panel, then let's put the Ferengi there too.
Yeah.
Okay. They are not really part of the Alpha Quadrant, but the Borg. I think if you're doing a Picard spinoff, there's going to be like a mandatory Borg episode where he's still getting over his issues with that particular species. But laughs, we saw them with regards to Voyager. They weren't destroyed, but they were
infected with a neurolytic pathogen.
Sure.
Yeah.
I also know that their transwarp capabilities were quite a bit damaged as well.
Right.
So the Borg are, like, I would be pretty bummed out if we find out that the Borg have just completely regained all their power and, like, I don't know. I'm so done with the Borg after Voyager.
Yeah, but the Borg, I think, are really tempting for especially like someone like Alex Kurtzman, who's not a hardcore Star Trek fan, which nothing wrong with that. But I think his touchstones for what Star Trek is going to be stories like Best of Both Worlds, First Contact, things like that. And the Borg are really great in those stories. And I'm not even implying he's after them for calculated, cynical reasons. I mean, he's probably like, those were great Borg stories. I would love to tell a great Borg story. You know, he may be a little drawn in that direction. Or even Akiva Goldsman as well, you know, who's overseeing Captain Picard as well.
Yeah.
Like, I just feel like the Borg are a draw because of the quality of stories they've generated. And so I do wonder what they can do with them.
it just means that they would kind of like retcon, but they would kind of do away with where we left them off with at Voyager, where they were on, I guess, a downward spiral.
Right. I don't even know what you do with the Borg, to be honest with you.
I have no idea at this point either.
Because the Borg sort of exist in a static state, unless they're being defeated, in that they are constantly wanting to bring in more people and just turn them into Borg. That's a tough thing to deal with, because unlike, say, the Klingons or the Romulans, who have power structures in place that are maybe flawed, but can be, you know, evolve over time, or you can have diplomacy between the two sides, the Borg don't offer that opportunity. And so I don't really know what you do.
I think the best thing to do is, I don't know, Picard somehow ends up isolated with the Borg Queen somehow.
Sure.
I'd love to see Alex Kriga return once more. I don't know what they really do with this little tango that they've done so many times before. Mm-hmm. But look, the chemistry between those two would be fascinating to watch. And I think you could probably convince Alex Kriga to do it again.
Yeah.
I just don't know where you go from there.
I just have no idea what you would ever say the end game for... that sounds
so
really
many
clunky.
Bad puns this
I know,
episode,
right?
Cam.
I don't know what the end game is, though, for, like, Borg society.
Well, okay. In my brain, and they kind of biffed this with regards to Voyager, but, like, in my brain, it's like where we left off with them in Descent Part 2, where... Hugh is kind of saying, well, let's kind of get this individuality thing going on.
But then are they really the Borg?
No. So what I'm interested in is, what if the collective is just, it's literally like gone.
Right.
So what you're dealing with is billions of individuals that are in just PTSD mode right
sure.
now. They don't know how to really survive at this point. And maybe Picard can sweep in.
After he's finished with reunification efforts.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. he'll Season two, he's doing the Borg.
But he can be a bit of, like, a therapist of sorts, too.
This is a thrilling TV show.
I know. But you know what? Like, it is kind of interesting in that, like, you know, Picard's like, hey, look, I've been there. Like, I know what you're going through. Here's how you go forward. But I think the idea of, like, a destroyed collective just leaving this huge, huge tidal wave of different individuals that just don't know what to do with themselves anymore. That's interesting.
Well, you got a lot of great stories, kind of not necessarily like that, but tied to similar ideas as with Seven of Nine.
Well, do you think Seven of Nine makes an appearance in this?
Okay, if you say that the Captain Picard spinoff is a one-season story, no.
Uh-huh.
If you say it's an ongoing series, I think the door is open.
I think they put the money there, and I think Jerry Ryan says, you want me to put, like, a little piece of, like, prosthetic on my eye?
Yeah.
Sure, not a problem. I'll totally do it.
Yeah.
And Jerry Ryan, Alex Kriga, two of the loveliest people you'll ever encounter at a Star Trek convention.
Definitely.
And I think they'd love the fans as well.
Yeah.
I think they're down for something like
Definitely.
This. So I just don't know if the Borg... have anything interesting left to do unless they're just completely disconnected from the collective.
Right. Which I feel like people running the Captain Picard show aren't like, those are the Borg stories we want to tell.
No, I know. maybe Kristen Bauer.
Maybe.
But I don't know.
She did write Voyager novels.
Yeah.
So she's very, very up on her Voyager lore.
Wow.
Oh, geez, another character name.
Wow, Cam.
But she's very up on her mythology of Voyager. So, I mean,
Did you say mythology of V'ger?
But that means that, like, what happened on Voyager isn't going to be ignored by someone on the writing staff.
Right.
Which is always, I think, cool to have.
Yeah.
Because I think it would be very easy for a showrunner who is maybe really not a Star Trek fan, who's taking it over. And is saying, like, okay, so
Brandon Braga?
So who's just like, I watch TNG. Like, they don't care about shows like Voyager and Deep Space Nine because they weren't even as popular as TNG. They're not even on Blu-ray, for God's sakes. You know,
Don't remind me.
And saying, let's just focus on the one that people love. So I think Kristen Bauer will hopefully offer something if you're going to do a Borg story that is at least feels like progress storytelling-wise. I don't know what that means for the Borg, though.
Did you just name-drop my favorite episode of Deep Space Nine?
Progress?
Progress?
I did on
with
purpose,
Kira and the Bajoran farmer? Cam, where's the Federation at this point? Like, is it status quo for them? You know, where, like, I just see post-Dominion War.
Yeah.
They kind of came out of everything much better than the Romulans, the Klingons, the Cardassians. I think all that's left for them to do is, like, keep welcoming in more planets.
Yeah.
I think the Federation is on the up and up, which makes me question what is kind of the conflict within, you know, and my biggest fear is that the creative team seems to really love Section 31.
Sure.
Which I think the Section 31 on Deep Space Nine was executed well.
Yeah.
I'm very fearful of how it's going to be executed going forward in Star Trek Discovery.
Right.
It wasn't very well executed on Enterprise.
Right.
Or in Into Darkness.
Yeah.
So I just hope we stay away from Section 31 in the Picard spinoff.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know. Do you think there's anything really interesting going on within, I don't know, the Federation and any potential conflict that exists?
I have no idea what they're going to do with the Federation.
I know. Kurtwood Smith's coming back.
Yeah, well, I would love that. But I will say, like, the one thing I would love to see more of is just using more of, like, your Andorians and your Tellarites.
Yeah.
You know, alien species we've seen used a lot in prequel series, but we've not seen in TNG, really, or onwards. Like, a lot of them are just original series-only type aliens.
Yeah, let's bring back some of those familiar, like, Enterprise, TOS, Discovery aliens that did not get a lot of screen time in the 24th century.
Like, we know the Vulcans are hugely important to the storytelling of the Federation. But, like, what about these others? They must contribute something.
Yeah.
And I would like to see what they contribute, why they're important, and what, you know, we have learned from them.
Yeah.
And, you know,
it's about time we have, like, an Andorian on the bridge, right?
Hell yeah. We almost had one.
Are you referencing that early artwork that was released before Star Trek Discovery's premiere? And it was highly alluded to the fact that we both have a Tellarite and an Andorian within kind of like the sort of crew. For those that may not recall this imagery that we're speaking of, it's pretty much like all these silhouettes of, I think maybe Brian Fuller, maybe the Star Trek Discovery CBS official account had tweeted out this image, and it got me so excited. But
yeah, because it also had like Ripper the Tardigrade as a crew member.
My favorite, like, little behind-the-scenes information was that they originally envisioned him as a puppet aboard the bridge.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that would have been amazing to watch.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. But no, like, I would love to see an Andorian on the bridge. I'd love to see Tellarites worked in more. It just seems so weird to me they're not, because there's so much attention is given to the Vulcans and how important they are and having Vulcans on the ships and interacting with characters in the stories. I just don't understand why these other members, like charter members of the Federation, aren't used more. Because even like, you know, Trills we see all the time now. Trills are just commonplace to see walking around in Star Trek.
Yeah.
Like, why aren't, I mean, Andorian makeup probably takes longer, but like, nonetheless, why aren't Andorians and Tellarites equally, you know,
they're
represented
so
on
iconic
screen.
Yeah.
You know? So I would just like to see more of that with the Federation. I would just like to see more of the Federation expressing its diversity better on screen.
As opposed to all these all-human councils that we constantly see?
Yeah. Or where the crew is like 80% human.
Yeah.
You know.
Maybe we'll get one episode. You know, maybe Picard is just embedded on a Vulcan expeditionary group ship.
Right.
And it's just him dealing with Vulcans all day. I don't know.
That would be pretty amazing. Where do you think the Vulcans are at this point?
I think they are where we left them off at. They seem like very much like a kind of a status quo society.
Right.
Save for the Kelvin universe. Where I think it's actually, I think it's far more interesting what you can do with the Vulcans in the Kelvinverse than maybe in the Prime universe myself.
Right.
So.
Do you think we see Bajorans in any sort of larger role?
I don't know about a large role, but I'd be surprised if we don't see Bajorans at all. I think by this point they are part of the Federation, and that lends itself to even more Starfleet members. You know, we actually saw quite a few for a species that weren't even part of the Federation.
I know,
which is interesting.
Yeah,
you know, but I generally do want an update on Bajor within the 24th century, because was there ever a single alien planet that had so much importance within the Star Trek universe other than Bajor?
No. I mean, I guess you could maybe say, like, the Vulcans were very important within Star Trek.
Yeah.
But not where the entire thrust of the whole series was about that planet.
Yeah, or think about like screen time devoted.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see more Bajorans for sure. I think they're so iconic at this point with like just having that basic nose wrinkle. They don't take a lot of work. Like, I think you could hear a lot of arguments from the showrunners being like, look, if we have a Tellarite on the bridge and an Andorian on the bridge and et cetera, like the makeup really piles up for your actors and getting all that done to shoot every day. Whereas, like, you know, Bajoran doesn't take too long. So I could totally see why they would throw them in as much as they could.
Who do you want to see as Kai?
Well, that does raise an interesting question because obviously so much at the end of Deep Space Nine was about what would be the future of Bajor. I would have to imagine the Kai they got next was probably better, right?
How can you do any worse? I don't know.
Do you think it was Shakar?
Kai Shakar?
Yeah.
No, because Shakar is an interesting... I was going to say...
interesting.
No, he's not interesting.
Tyler's hallucinating.
I don't think he was all that interesting. Like, Kira was a very religious person.
Yes.
I never got that sense from Shakar, necessarily. Yeah, yeah. I think he was more of the reluctant politician, the mm-hmm. reluctant leader. I think politics was his game, not mm-hmm. religion. And so... I don't think we're going to see a revival of Shakar.
That's the other spinoff they're waiting to announce.
Star Trek Shakar? Wow. Okay.
How many viewers does that get on its first week?
You just used the word viewers, plural.
Well, you and I would both be watching it religiously.
Okay, okay, there you go. There you go.
That's a bad pun. That's why.
Wow.
Watching it religiously.
I get it, yeah.
Are there any other aliens, though, you'd like to see? Because the Alpha Quadrant has a ton of iconic aliens.
Yes, I do. Okay, I want to see a return of the Orion Syndicate, and I want to see the Orion Syndicate fleshed out.
Yes,
and the thing is, I actually envision it as kind of an anti-federation of sorts, in that you can have Ferengi that are part of the Orion Syndicate. Maybe they're drug traffickers. You can have Orions, obviously, as part of the Orion Syndicate. You can have Klingon mercenaries. You know, so it's interesting to see kind of all these different species coming together for these opposite reasons that species would come together in the Federation. I think that actually lends itself to some very interesting potential there. You and I, we just had a discussion the other night about a Star Wars underworld sort of, you know, spin-off stuff. I'm not so in favor of that, but because I was actually pitching to you, like, why can't we just have, like, good heroes as opposed to anti-heroes? That's what Star Trek's all about. So I think it would actually work if we have the underworld element there, because we're actually following real heroes,
mm-hmm.
and we can just have kind of the underworld elements as, like, hey, guys, it's obviously wrong.
Right.
I'm genuinely very curious about maybe what the Orion Syndicate holds.
And if we look at how much evolution has gone on with the Klingons over the years.
I mean, name dropped another episode.
I know
you?
I did, yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, the Orions have been static since the 60s.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, at what point are they due for some sort of story arc or something that brings them more into focus and maybe refines who they are for a generation of viewers who might find Orion representations of the past a little outdated at this point?
I think actually the best like leap forward we got was in Star Trek Into Dark, or was it Into Darkness?
2009,
where we had Rachel Nichols' character as a, you know, Orion in Starfleet.
Mm-hmm.
And then honestly, I was pretty bummed out when they established in Star Trek Discovery that in both the Mirror Universe as well as the Prime Universe that they are considered to be like pirates of sorts. I was just like, I thought there was potential for them to be a society that is not monolithic in its depiction.
Right.
It, you know, it could be a whole variety of different, you know, people that are, you know, pursuing other things.
But just in terms of timeline, though, Discovery is a whole other timeline than the Picard show. So I would love to see, because the Orions were completely ignored on TNG. There was acknowledgement of them throughout Deep Space Nine, but usually just to the Orion Syndicate.
Yeah.
So I would like to see them brought more into focus. But, I mean, it does, I think, raise an interesting question we had when we came up with this podcast topic, which is that has the Alpha Quadrant, in a way, worn out its, not its welcome, but, like, worn out sort of its...
The possibilities that you can do after 700 hours?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because it's tough to introduce major new forces in the Alpha Quadrant, given that we've very much established what the power structures of the Alpha Quadrant are.
And I think the reason, like, the Picard spinoff makes sense is I think CBS All Access realizes how much people love the 24th century.
Yeah.
And I think by the time that the Picard spinoff is actually taking place, it's literally like $23.99.
Yeah.
So we'll be dipping into the 25th century pretty soon. Mm-hmm. But I would actually kind of prefer to see the Alpha Quadrant in maybe the 26th century, so to speak. Like, right. How have things been shaken up to a much greater degree where there's maybe different prime players going forward? Because I really feel as if after hundreds of hours, we kind of have gone everywhere we can with regards to the vast majority of these species.
Right, yeah. I mean, unless you're going to spend a lot of time, like, furthering the development of, like, the Denobulans or...
Can't wait.
You know, the Deltons or something. Yeah, like, I feel...
Actually, no. Yeah, I'm down for more Deltons. Yeah.
I do feel like Voyager did a really smart thing, I think, in that it went to the Delta Quadrant, which was an entirely new place.
Did you say Delton Quadrant?
I did not say Delton.
Okay.
Which was an entirely new thing, and they set up, over the course of Voyager's journey home, all these different power structures throughout the quadrant. So we can argue back and forth about which ones worked, which ones didn't. And we did that in an episode called Aliens of the Delta Quadrant. Mm-hmm. But it ultimately established who had sort of the rule over the various sections of the quadrant and gave you an idea that you could go like, okay, I understand how the Delta Quadrant works. Deep Space Nine did that as well with the Gamma Quadrant to a certain degree, not maybe to the depth that Voyager did in kind of laying out all the various alien species of the quadrant. But it did give us a really good idea of what the Gamma Quadrant is and how it kind of operates. I would love to see Star Trek do that again because I do think it works. I know it means getting away from the familiar, and the familiar is much easier to market to people.
Oh, yeah.
But I would love to see them go to, like, say, the Beta Quadrant and, you know, have them going to places where, you know, no one has ever gone before in the Beta Quadrant and establishing new aliens that we can at some point bring back into the familiar.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm totally with you there.
So I just think that if you're going to do Picard spinoffs, TNG at its best was all about doing the types of stories Star Trek had never done before and pushing forward what Star Trek storytelling is. And I think it would be kind of sad if the Picard spinoff was him kind of hopping between the established aliens of the Alpha Quadrant being like, so guys, what's new?
I know. It
It would be a greatest hits album.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
And we'd be kind of like, okay.
With Kurtwood Smith on guitar.
But yeah, I tell you, the fans would love nothing more.
I know.
But
I know.
I'm not interested in that. I've got 170 plus episodes of TNG to go back and rewatch if I really wanted that.
I mean, to be fair, though, Patrick Stewart did say it would be very, very different than what people expected.
Good.
Yeah.
That's what I want. So
it's Picard going to hang out with the Deltons. He's got the head for it.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete.
It's a great note to leave it off.
If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, jump on over to our Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Let us know which aliens of the Alpha Quadrant you'd like to see pop up and where you'd like to see them take them, as well as where else Picard should go other than the Alpha Quadrant.
He can explore the Breen Confederacy.
Oh, that'd be gold. Okay, so Tyler, what are we doing next week?
We've been talking about this for a long, long time, Cam. Off the beaten path. I know a lot of fans are kind of scratching their heads like, what does that even mean? But, you know, there's always these
episodes where they go hiking on unmarked trails.
and sing Row, Row, Row Your Boat.
Yeah.
No, but, you know, there's these episodes of Star Trek where they don't really follow the established formula of the series. You can point to an episode like Lower Decks, which we recently talked about in quite a bit of depth. Also, episodes like, say, 1159 from Voyager or mm-hmm. Carbon Creek from Enterprise. So we're going to explore what makes these episodes work or what makes them not work, so to speak. And it's going to be interesting in whether or not there's comparisons in, say, Star Trek Discovery and what would perhaps work going forward in Star Trek.
Right, yeah. I think this is going to be a lot of fun, and it gives me a good opportunity to talk about episodes I would find very difficult to shoehorn into discussions, you know, in this regular podcast.
Yeah.
So, especially 1159. Okay, so you can also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Vedic Shakar, spinoff, coming in 2020. Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P-O-R-T-O, as in Orion Syndicate spinoff, N.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.